Okay. I know that the sound sounds terrible. I'll try to talk loud. Although I fear that probably won't matter much. Well, regardless, this is one of those recordings that I don't put out on the website. It stays on the gopher side. I wouldn't say it's difficult to get to, but it is, it's not convenient. You can get to it, but not really. It ends up being my personal recordings. Someday, perhaps, it'll be, if somebody finds out I'm important enough, which I have no earthly idea if that'll ever come. Boy, that looked like a red heifer. Just in the sunlight. Although it was big and it certainly was not perfect, but nonetheless. It's an extremely windy day. I'm somewhat concerned when I get to the blister, how much of the blister will be there. I'm pretty sure the actual frame will still be in place, perhaps. But don't know about the rest of it. I am buying a boat, which I'm going to park out there, and that's going to be where I live and sleep. Stuck behind a truck that really doesn't seem to be able to do very well up here. That's why the sound quality all of a sudden got a lot better. Because not only am I getting all the noise, it's a very noisy car. It's made to be efficient, not be nice. I've got a lot of cross traffic for some reason. That's different. I've got some things I want to talk about. Are tricky things, honestly. Oh my gosh, what traffic do I have? I'm doing 50. Oh, good night. All right, we're gonna be able to go now. Quickly though. Whistles a lot. Usually the speed doesn't do it, but it's this 50 mile an hour wind outside that's hitting it funny. I get more and more evidence, and this is good, that I'm not an official representative of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Although I get my priesthood authority, church administers the temples where I go to make my covenants with God. there's always gratitude there. I want to retain these things. I guess I hear that that's a different take than many Latter-day Saints have. I am always a little bit apart. I'm always a little bit different. I always have a different take on these things, I suppose. I don't know if that's good or bad. I am always somewhat amazed with how much God blesses me. Helps me to as I think about how I think the future might go, as Jews come view Christ, Jesus, as their Messiah, I think many Latter-day Saints have the idea that Jews will start joining the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm not saying that won't happen. That's somewhat the story of my family. I don't think most Jews will join the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I don't see a bunch of Jews rejecting their past and going to Latter-day Saint church meeting houses and becoming good little Christians. And I don't have a problem with that. In fact, I really think that in the end, the Jews, which constitute one large coherent branch of the children of Israel, I've observed that Latter-day Saint practice, in that it's been changing for the last few years, is beginning to feel just a little, not much at all, but a little more Jewish. A lot of Jewish religious practice is not done congregationally. Although you do have Jewish congregations. You have synagogues. You have what they've started calling temples, which do not bear any relation. It's just a big synagogue. The temple is extremely different. Anyway, I see Latter-day Saints ever so slightly starting to shift toward what I would consider to be a more Jewish mode code of religiosity, which is far more family-centered, far more home-centered than Christianity ever was. Christianity was always congregational. But I think that also came from the fact that, to a large extreme, Christianity has been somewhat divisive of family traditions, whether it was a pagan family tradition or whether it was a Jewish family tradition. So instead of Jews becoming Latter-day Saints, I think to a little extent, Latter-day Saints are finding themselves becoming Jews, which is right, in a way. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is largely composed of people who grew up in a kind of a Protestant mode. I'd say that we don't have a lot of converts from Catholicism, at least not in North America. It may be true in South America that a lot of the Latter-day Saints down there came to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from Catholicism. That's difficult. I don't think there is much of a search in Catholicism. There is much more of a tradition there. So I find that to be interesting. And I'm not going to say, oh, well, the brethren were thinking along those lines. I have no idea. I am not terribly orthodox on any point. I used to be quite an orthodox Latter-day Saint. I still am a Latter-day Saint, but I find that as time passes, I'm less and less orthodox of one. I don't, and that's difficult to describe because I don't think there is an LDS orthodoxy. There is certainly a Mormon culture, and I use the differing term, the kind of derivative term, Mormon, purposefully. A lot of what goes on in Utah is Mormon culture. And it's hard for the church to grow past that because the church is so Utah-centric. I call it the Jello Belt, you know, the places that are, you know, Idaho, up into Alberta, where there are concentrations of Mormons, and I've avoided them. I went on my mission to Utah. And I don't know if God did that just so I would get a good snoot full of it so that I wouldn't have any interest in it. And I tell you, I don't have much interest in it. My wife is often, has at times said that she would prefer living in Utah. I don't know if she hasn't talked like that lately, and I'm grateful for that. I don't want to create problems in the family and have a split, and she'll finally move up to Utah. Um, My uncles and my brother, my older brother, went to school in Utah, went to BYU. You know, it's where you're supposed to go to school if you're a good Latter-day Saint boy or girl. And they have strong affinities to Utah. And one of my uncles and my father and my mother and my brother have all moved to Utah. I, on the other hand, really haven't. I'm gonna come in here and the gas prices are terrible here. This is about 20 cents more expensive than where it was before. I want to get one of these reward cards for Allsup's. About half of my trip, there's Allsup's gas stations, and I need to save money on them. So I'm going to go ahead and pause this for a little bit, take care of that, and then I'll be right back. All right. Well, we're going to continue here. It's going to get windy and noisy again, but that's life. become accustomed to it. Think of where I got to. Oh, about the church. I've always viewed the church as it's got a couple of functions to it. Of course, it's kind of the organization set up to promulgate the restored gospel, number one. You know, you almost get some kind of and it's easy to get that sort of an attitude that the church kind of owns the gospel. It doesn't. Now, the church contains the priesthood structure. It makes the things regular. And I'm not saying anything bad about the church. You know, now I get very concerned when people call the church perfect. You know, they'll say, well, the church is a perfect organization run by imperfect people. And it's like, dude, that is such a Utah Jello Belt cultural concept. It says, I don't know why that has to be true. I don't feel like that the church is particularly perfect at all. Some people can say that the church has strayed. I don't look at it in those kinds of terms. You know, strayed from what? Does it still preach the gospel of Jesus Christ? It does. Now, do a lot of people, maybe even highly placed leadership in the church, has some interesting doctrine been allowed, tolerated, even promulgated? Yes, I think so. Does that make the church apostate or wrong? I still don't look at it exactly in those kinds of terms. The church has all of the, I'm tempted to say almost public information that God has given to his children. It can be found in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's why I stay close to it. That's why I am a part of it. That's why I contribute to it. Is for that reason. Do I think it's the perfect organization? I do not. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not a pretty good organization. I'm not one of those people who says, and heaven's organized in exactly the same way. You know, it's done exactly the same thing. We're all organized into little wards. And, you know, we all go and sing before we say our prayers, and we, you know, and we have some humorous talks and some religious talks too. And that the bulk of, quote, testimonies will be mostly about how friendly all their nice neighbors who are also Latter-day Saints are, and how homey the branch feels, and how much they just absolutely love and practically worship their bishop right up there next to Jesus. You know, in fact, you might get more about the bishop than you do about Jesus. And that's just human nature. I'm not going to sit there and really schwack it terribly hard. Although I will on occasion, you know. I am a extremely low-level holder of the priesthood. I am the basic priesthood holder. You know, I'm not even a high priest. So, you know, people will be very dismissive of me. And it's like, that suits me fine. I used to have problems with it. I thought I was deserving of more and better, and, you know, I had a better beat on things than other people do. And whether I do or not, or whether people listen to me or not, as time has passed by, it becomes less and less interesting to me. I'm going to say what I say. I'm going to do what I do. Do I have faults? Yes. Chock full of faults. Are there some things that I need to do? Yes. But I'm going to... I'm going to try to keep it between me and God as to going forward. I guess if you count being a good Latter-day Saint as one that goes to church on Sunday, you know, I'm the local clerk of the church, therefore, you know, am I trusted? Yes. Our little branch of the church, Tucum Cary, is very kind to me, and that's nice. I've been called to the mat a few times, but I've mostly been called to the mat by members of the Orthodoxy, and I'm somewhat dismissive of those things. You know, I doubt I'm ever going to be a high counselor. I don't think I'm ever going to be called into a branch presidency ever again, unless it's just out of an act of sheer desperation. this was, the last couple of years have helped me to see that the church is somewhat precarious. A lot of official things that you will hear from the brethren, especially in general conference, not that it isn't good things. I've always said that the church is, its real focus is on first gear. In a car, you have a, you have several gears. The faster you go, the gears shift to giving you more speed than power. And the church is really a first gear organization, and it teaches a first gear gospel, which is not bad. It's repentance, 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 baptism, 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 baptism. There is lots of, now can I say that in the last little bit, I think the brethren are really wanting us to move into second gear. I think that's wonderful, where it's much more about the temple. Now, a reasonable proportion of Latter-day Saints are not terribly interested in the temple. You may be able to get them to go, but they may have only gone once. And after they saw that, they said, you know, that's not interesting to me, you know. Or whatever. They just lose interest in it. And I'm not a person to try and push them, because I think a lot of people just want the God of the first gear, a religious tradition of the first gear, and that's okay. They can still be members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, even good, upstanding ones, and just not be interested in the temple, and not really be interested particularly in celestial glory. You know, the same, you know, it's just like, well, they just really want more of a Protestant thing, you know. I just want to go to church, you know. I like the word of wisdom. It teaches my kids to be good. You know, there was some guy who was talking about all the wonderful things about the church, you know, don't date until they're 16, which is, that's fine. Those aren't bad standards. Those are great standards. But it's really not what the church is there to do. And it's become obvious as we see teenagers, once they hit their 20s, if they decide not to go on a mission, you know, chances are excellent that they're just going to leave the church. You know, and I think that's just true across what I would call the Protestant landscape. You know, I think these are deeper spirits. And if you only access the church to that level, to just say, yeah, I grew up in the church, but I kind of wandered off when I was a teenager. And, you know, they only look at the church as this kind of a thing. And that's, and I said, can I be honest? It's because for a long, long time, that was all the church tried to do. It just tried to keep up Mormon culture. I used to say something that was probably vaguely rude, which was, oh, and I helped keep up the Utah Cultural Center, which is what is what I consider a whole lot of first gear Mormonism, and I'll use that term, first gear Mormonism, to be. It's just like any other Protestant church. You know, the Protestants kill themselves trying to come up with a really great youth program to keep their kids busy and to keep their kids away from drugs and premarital sex and all that. And that's common among Protestant religions, and the Mormon church did the same thing as well. And we're finding it just as inappropriate or ineffectual with our youth as the Protestant churches do. It's just the Protestant churches, that's all they've got. It's all they've got. The LDS church has a lot more. It's about the temple. And that's that second tier, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And you know, that's really important. So anyway, let me circle back a little bit to the fact that the church is on tenuous ground. The world is becoming far more anti-Christian. The LDS church actually is shielded a little from the anti-Christian sentiment because everybody says, well, the Mormons aren't Christian. I mean, for most people, it's actually worse. But, you know, shielded from that a little bit. However, we have always had tricky relations with government anyway. Very, very rarely do we have governments that like us, for one reason or another. I mean, you know, the early history of the church was a history of Latter-day Saints being constantly at odds with their neighbors. Doesn't matter what stripe they were. You could say they were Christians, and you go, probably so. Doesn't matter. It didn't mean they were treated any better. All right, we're going to make this turn here before this guy hits me. That works good. Okay. Now we're on the road to the blister now, finally. Huh. Still got over an hour before I get there. I'm still surprised the sun's up. 1 hour of extra time really gives you a lot. Well, regardless, okay, so I apologize, but not. The church officially has to do, so public pronouncements from the brethren have to do a lot of kowtowing to government. Whichever governments they're dealing with, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in the United States. The United States is the biggest one, since this is where the church headquarters is. Of course, the move of the church headquarters would not be difficult. One of the biggest problems is, see, this is why there's a lot of interesting struggles. Between the church and the civil authority, trying to just keep the peace. The civil authority has already done horrible things to the church way back in the past, you know, and there's a certain group of people who says, well, the Lord won't let that happen again, and you're going, well, it... The Lord can do many things, but He's not obligated to do much of anything except that the things He has said are going to happen are going to happen. That much you can know. If you start trying to put other things into His wheelhouse and saying, oh, He has to do that, you know, He's got to protect the church against the civil authority, and you go, no, I'm pretty sure His basic line to the brethren in relation to that is do whatever it takes to keep the civil authority from disenfranchising you. You can't do much missionary work when you're not an organization anymore, when you don't have some sheen of officiality. Therefore, you know, that becomes extremely important to the church. You know, the interest in keeping tax-exempt status in the United States. If we had to start paying taxes on all our properties in the United States, it would be a tough road. Fiscally. You know, this life is a test for individual people, and good things and bad things make for an excellent test. In fact, the more bad things that you end up happening to you, the more accurate, I don't know if accuracy is really the right word, but the better the life test is. Now we know that there will never be another full-scale apostasy. But you have to remember how these apostasies come to pass. The leadership of the church in whatever time it was in turns from the gospel of Jesus Christ and is more interested in something else. You know. One of the promises we have is that there will not be another apostasy. The gospel will not be taken off the earth again. The priesthood will not be removed from the earth again. It just won't happen. Now, whether these things still manifest in the same way, you know, people translate that into, well, the church is going to remain on the earth forever, and you go, that may be so. That may be true, but it may not be. There are many times when there was no church, when it was strictly a family or a national thing. For Abraham, the gospel and the keeping of the gospel was a family matter. That also seemed to be true in the times of, I guess you call them the patriarchs, I'm not sure, before the flood. these things were a family matter. The priest had passed from father to son. And that's how it worked, all the way down to Abraham. There were a few, you could call them, you know, I would call churches analogous to communities. We know of a few community-based priesthood situations. One of them was the city of Enoch. Another one was the city of Salem. When Moses reestablished what would be the worship of God and what you could loosely call the gospel in his time, it was the first instance of a national thing, and that's when we first find about the religion. And that's probably, you know, and that's somewhat churchy too. And one of the great apostasies is the one among the Jews, when everything was corrupted, the high priesthood was bought and sold as a political position. What's another good way to say it? The temple was desecrated. I don't know when exactly the Jewish nation, you could say, oh, the Jewish nation fell, and you go, well, you know, there was several falls among them, where they were basically not even, they didn't even worship God anymore. They worshiped other gods, or they worshiped nothing. And, but as something of a nation, they were chastised and put back on the path various times. Here's a good example. Josiah was a good example. Of course, Ezra and Nehemiah, good examples. Daniel, although I don't think Daniel really went in that direction. He was more of just a righteous person that God communicated with. And it didn't really have to do with the Jews, you know. We have his record because he was a Jew. That's all. You know, he didn't save the Jews. He didn't try to redeem the Jews particularly. He didn't do that. Anyway. But yeah, and the Book of Mormon is an excellent example. For up to Alma the Elder, there was no church. But it wasn't family-based, it was national. You know, it was like it was for the Jews originally, after Moses. There was a national religion. You know, the whole fact that King Benjamin, he was the king, but he was also a prophet and their chiefest religious leader, along with his son Mosiah. That was at the tail end of the national religion and the beginning of a church where, you know, you would have congregations and you would come together and people fell off and different communities broke off. Things like that. I don't know what we're heading into, but there's nothing to say that the church might might ultimately just not be able to continue as the entity that it is now. The Savior Christ may refer to his collective believers as the church. That's okay. Because it's really interesting when you look in the New Testament, and you have to understand that the New Testament is really a product of several centuries after Christ, when there was a church there. Christ would talk about the church, and you're going, but that's not how it would have worked in his time. There was no church in his time. He did not... there was no church in his lifetime. In his time, he had put together... that thing looks like a bomb. He had set apart the 12. He had brought back the priesthood. He had taught it to his apostles. And he had started on the 70. Beyond that, I don't think anything really happened. I don't even know that there were separate congregations or any congregations at all. These things happened later, and I'm not saying that Christ didn't authorize them. I'm not going to say that that's so. But, we have to know that this particular form isn't the form that God's people took during all generations of time. It just simply isn't. So, I don't know. I don't know if the church is going to be ultimately morph into something else. We know there's going to be a city of Zion at some point. We'll see how that comes to pass. I have no idea if that's going to be the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I really don't know. Maybe, but perhaps not. A lot of my recent thinking has been about, would you fall away? Would you abandon this thing if circumstances were not how you culturally think it would go? I always highlight as, would you have a problem if Jesus was fat? Would you turn away from him and say, that can't possibly be the Christ? Our tradition says he's strapping and muscular and, carpenter's son type of thing. And, everybody's really sure about how it must be, and you're going, but what happens if Christ is a different sort? What happens if Christ isn't as, quote, loving as you think he should be? will it bother you if Jesus is not a hugger? I'm sorry. I see little evidence in the scriptural record about Jesus Christ that he hugged anybody. I'm not saying he didn't. I don't know. But the record doesn't say that. But you would swear that it was a constant feature of Christ by how many Latter-day Saints view it that way. According to the Gospel of, what's that poem called? The Gospel of Footsteps. It's not called the Gospel of. But it has risen so much to the whole level, you know, the whole thing where you're walking along the beach of life and tough things happen. And you see that there's two pairs of footprints, you and Christ, and then all of a sudden there's one pair of footprints, and you might get a little angry at Christ because, you know, what happened to Christ? He abandoned you in the hard times. And Christ says, those were the times when I carried you. And I'm not saying that that's not, you know, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It has become such a tenet of Christianity that I'm sorry to say that if you find out that Jesus Christ says, you know, no, I don't pick up people, I don't hold their hand, I don't, you know, said I took your sins upon me if you repent, is that not good enough for you? Do you need more? You know, and some people get really offended and say, well, that's not, no, you're preaching the wrong Christ, and you're going, be careful what you say and what you believe and where you get it from. You might be led astray. And in doing so, when you find out that Jesus is not what you envisioned, when you find out that Jesus may not be the kind of abused beta male that that he's typically portrayed as these days, are you gonna leave him? You know, when Christ comes, are you gonna run away and just say, I want no part of that? I'm not gonna talk about experiences I've had with God. But some of my experiences have not been of the loving nature. It's been more of, it actually hurts to be in his presence. And I think I've got much scriptural backup to this concept of it. It is not like Jesus comes and wraps you in a fluffy, warm blanket and you feel fantastic. It's more like I felt like I was going to die is a common, it's a common thing in relation to it. So it's not to say, you know, it says God often talks about fear. And a lot of people say, oh, well, that's just pablum for people who wouldn't be good unless they were going to be punished otherwise. And you go, can I be honest? You're probably one of those people. Because you've manifested for yourself such a lovey-dovey God that you'll probably be very disappointed. I think the basic idea, there's going to basically be two basic thoughts when Christ comes. Either A, you're basically going to, and this one's scriptural, you're going to want to run and hide and have everything in the world fall on you just to keep you from feeling his presence. And that's not exciting. That's terrible and frightening and scary. Fear God. And people say, well, God says fear not. And you go, no, he says fear not man. Fear not what's going to happen. I'm going to take care of everything. But he certainly tells you to fear him. for what he can do to you. You should approach God with fear and trembling. That's what the scriptures, that's what one of the scriptures say. It could be many more. And this is good. When Abram took Isaac up to, it may have been Abraham, but when Abraham took Isaac up to sacrifice him, it was not a question of he did it because he loved God. I said, I'm pretty sure, and I think the scriptures bear it out, he did it out of fear of God. Did it in obedience to God's command. It was not, show you love me, kill your kid. That's sick and gross. But can I tell you, if that's the way you look at God as this wonderful God of love, you know, this is, I'm not saying God doesn't love you. I said, but he's a pretty tough father. He's trying to get you to somewhere. He's trying to get you to be the kind of person you need to be. And loving, to a large extent, isn't going to get you there. Loving turns you into a spoiled child. Hello? Does anyone see this today in the children that are being raised today, in that they don't... If you aren't a little terrified of your earthly father, if your father just kind of dotes on you and tells you how much he loves you all the time and doesn't have expectations for you of really becoming anything or really doing anything, says, does this make godly people? Not really. So, anyway. I'm sorry, I keep getting off on tangents, which is what I always do. The church has to protect itself. It says, therefore, it is not going to be it's an earthly institution. And it has to appease earthly powers. That's why people say, well, how come the church decided all of a sudden that gays were, you know, if not wonderful, at least they were acceptable? You know, you can say you're gay and you can come to the LDS church if you behave according to the tenets of the church in relation to sexuality. Intimacy, however you want to say it. You know, you can do anything in the church. Where a generation before, if somebody would have said, hey, I'm gay, it would have been immediate excommunication and get you gone. And that doesn't happen now. And you're going, well, did things change? And you go, societal conditions changed, paired with a governmental orgy with such people. Very quiet about transgenders, although we tend to support equality for transgenders. Is it a sin? Well, you'd be hard-pressed to find a Latter-day Saint authority who would just come right out and say, yes, it's a sin. Even though, very obviously, it's a sin. They're not going to say it because of their public their public standing as a mouthpiece for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I think that's why it's so important that you have a home-based church. In my home, I am not shy. Ask my eldest daughter, who has decided she's a man and will have and basically refuses to speak to me ever because I will not call her by some assumed transgender name, and I will not refer to her as a man. I will not do it. Says, I am sorry. I saw you come out of your mother's belly. I know what sex you are. I know all those things about you. You can take all the body parts off you want to, and it doesn't change what you are. You are a human female. And as such, you have some responsibilities to family and to society, which she totally rejects. And I will not give her that stuff. I said, I'm just not going to play that game. I'm not going to pull that stunt. This is garbage. Now, I can get away with that as a human being. I do not I don't do that as a representative of the Church of Christ of Latter-day Saints because I'm not one. You know, and people can say, well, that Jason Nimro, he's a nasty, disgusting bigot. And you go, whatever. And if at some point the church just simply has to say, I'm sorry, Jason, we just can't let you stay a member of the church whilst you're not embracing transgendered people. And you go, okay, you can feel free to do that. I'm going to follow God. I know you have to. You have to do what it takes to keep the church on, you know, the church running. I understand. This is, there's no animosity. I have no problem. You know, you can decide whether I'm allowed to come into the church building anymore. You can decide whether I can act in a priesthood manner. I said, I'm actually in an interesting situation. Because I'm a descendant of Aaron, I have a bit of priesthood inherently. As long as I am righteous and as long as I'm honorable to it, you know, there is no central authority of Judaism to say, yes, you're a priest and yes, you are not a priest. So me as a priest, as a descendant of Aaron, I can operate somewhat independently. And it gives me a little bit of courage just to say, well, that's fine. I understand that the church has to say what it has to say so that, you know, it gets to hold on to the temples. You know, if it's someday I am told that I can no longer go to the temple, that will be a very sad day for me. My greatest desire is I won't get vindictive about it. I said the church has to do what the church has to do. I have some confidence that, for the most part, and I am in a little branch in the middle of nowhere, and I have only made what I feel I felt comfortable as. Well, no, not even that. I'll be the first one to say these are not. This is not the official word of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I do not represent the church publicly. I only represent myself. Which I do here, you know. If you want the disclaimer, you got it. Oh, darn it. I was supposed to bring the big stepladder. That's fine. I could just go and buy one. There's nothing to it. If I have to, I'll find a way to climb into the silly thing. Rope ladder, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, it's not the end of the world. Oh, we're here at Willard. This is a pretty good place to be. I have to slow down. The church is a first gear organization. It teaches the first gear gospel. And it's pushing people to get to the second gear, which is the temple. And it struggles enough to try and get enough people to do that. You know, and it's really gotten to the point where they've just come out and said it. Said the whole purpose of the church is to get you in a position so you can go to the temple and enjoy the blessings of the temple there. And that's what it is. That is the great, the biggest thing, I think, that separates the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from every other Christian church out there, is the fact that it has temples. We're getting a little more open about the temple. Now, that's not to say that there's certain aspects of it that are sacred and we don't do and we don't talk about outside of its precincts, of course. But far more about the temple is being made publicly available. Not the buildings themselves, but what goes on in them than has ever been before. And that's probably for the best. And I think to a certain extent, that's another aspect of, it's been made apparently clear to those in power that unless we are a little bit more forthcoming about these things, governments will find a way to just shut us down altogether and get rid of us. It's always been kind of a standing threat from the very beginning that these things are going to be problematic. We tend to do better in monarchies and republics than we do in, quote, democracies, you know, because most people don't like Mormons. And if you give a lot of power to just the majority, to the mob, which is really getting fought hard in the United States, a lot of people want mob rule here. They want the tyranny of the majority. Our founders knew it was a horrible idea. Nothing will sink a country faster than being able to pretty much do whatever you want if you can get 51% of people, or trick 51% of people, or whatever, into letting you do it. That's a frightening thing. That's why you need to have something of a constitution, something of a document that that precludes these kinds of situations. Anyway, it always works better under a monarchy because you can please the monarch. It's not difficult to please the monarch when you have God on your side and you perform miracles. This tends to ingratiate yourself time and again with monarchs. That was how Judaism survived through the Babylonian period, all those times, was because of how blessed certain individuals that follow God can be. And it becomes obvious that these blessings are desirable to the monarch. And the monarch will say that these people are fine. You know, you may want them destroyed, but I don't care. I'm the monarch and they're under my protection. You know, the story of Esther, the story of, oh my gosh, Daniel, are those kinds of stories. So yeah, the problem is the United States of America really, 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 more and more people really want just a straight democracy, and they always talk about it that way, and people have just kind of said, well, fine, we're a democracy, when we're not created that way, and that is not constitutional. The Constitution does not works hard to make sure that although the Constitution can be changed, it's really hard democratically to get it done. Really hard. But someday it may very well happen. And that would be a sad day, because that's the end of it right there. But regardless, the church has to appease whatever the civil power is. Right now, because of the civil power, there is a lot of kowtowing to be done to gays and to transgenders. They're very powerful politically right now. I don't know if that's going to remain for very long. But a lot of the things that they wanted to get into law have been gotten into law. And once you have a law written, you really have to work hard to get rid of it. Probably the wonder of Trump was that he was the kind of person who just ignored politics to a certain extent and could push things through like that. So a lot of people didn't like him because they thought he was imperial. I'm not much of for imperialist, but if it's an imperial good guy, I may not have much of a problem with it. Sadly, in the United States, you change kings. You can change kings every 4 years now. You know? And the longest you can have a king is 8 years. So that's how you can look on imperialism in the United States. So the only check to it is that you have to change them out every 48 years. I would prefer a constitutional republic like we had originally, but that's pretty broken now. Powerful people have taken over the legislative branches. Doesn't matter whether they're Republicans or Democrats. Still the same kind of people. It looks like it's snowing, but I think it's just flat, big chunks of dirt flying through the air at 50 miles an hour. I'm really interested to see what my poor blister looks like now. Regardless, so those are the conditions under which the church has to operate in many parts of the world. And mostly it has to appease the United States, the current world power. And the church has political needs. It's got to survive. So therefore, you know, if you are looking for great pronouncements, denouncing specifically the way the world is going, so far it's worked okay to say things are getting darker, this is bad. Almost every political group would agree with it. They certainly have a different vision of the kind of world we need to get to. But the church is very careful not to express anything like that. They're very careful about not talking too pointedly about the last days, about what they're going to look like. They usually frame it in very vague terms. I find that it's to appease political players. And that we have to look as nice and unassuming and innocuous as we can as a group, the Latter-day Saints do. You know, still our biggest thing is to be excellent citizens of whatever country we're a part of, keep all the rules. I think we are being pressed heavily to get involved in our communities under whatever auspice is useful. My problem is that my politics often get in the way of doing that, and I've got to be very careful about, you know, I said, well, I'm a member of the Church of Christ of Latter-day Saints, although I'm not I cannot say that I am a typical one. And therefore, you know, says you should not judge Latter-day Saints based on me. You know, and the church comes back and says, well, why can't they? Why couldn't they do that? And you go, do you really want to get into politics? And it's like, no. And then they go, well, then don't ever ask me that question again. Anyway. Smart money says we don't talk about politics. You go, good. I do. And you go, and that's why I'm not, you know, says there's too many people out there that think that Mormons are crazed lunatics, preppers, dyed-in-the-wool conservatives. I'm not a conservative. I don't want to restore the 50s. Says it's not, you know, said I'm sorry. Says, and that's what conservative is, basically what conservatism is. If we could reset the whole world back to before, you know, the 60s counterculture, that's what we want to do. And that is to some degree what conservatism dreams of, is a return to that age. And I don't dream of that. I actually dream further into the future. And I'm not... I want Zion to come to pass. And that's a strange thing. It says, because they go, well, describe Zion to me. It says, I don't know what that entails. All I know is, I know it's going to be better than this. So that's what I strive for. And you go, you are a weird bird. You go, I absolutely agree with you. I am an intensely weird bird. Says, which is why I say, you know what? Said, having me go out and them saying, well, go and talk to your friends and tell them about the church. And you go, I don't have any friends. And, you know, people deal with me because I can be useful to them. And insofar as I can be useful to the church, I'll do that. You know, I'm going to. Stuff. So there's one of the things I've been thinking about for a while, is the fact that, you know, the church really is kind of stuck with the situation it's in. And it's mostly of a political nature, and there's really nothing that can be done about it. So, you know what, I think I'm going to stop this here, and that's it. And I'll record something else some other time. Talk to you later. Bye.